Good evening. You're listening to the Hour of the Time, and I'm your host, Michelle. We will be continuing today with the second part of the Basic Training Handbook of the American Underground. I would remind the listeners that this material is approximately 35 years old, and you must view it from the perspective of gleaning broad, applicable principles from it, rather than looking for specific strategies and tactics. The important thing to view are the principles, which can be applied and modified to a variety of circumstances and conditions. And I would also like to remind you that we view this material not as anti-government radicals. We are not anti-government. Our government is the Constitution for the United States of America, and we will protect and defend that Constitution against all enemies, foreign or domestic, forever. So keep those matters in mind. We'll be back in just a minute to begin this continuation of the material, so get a pencil and paper by your side, and we'll be ready to roll.
They come to America. They come to America. country vis-a-vis. Sweet land of liberty.
This is part two of our review of the Basic Training Handbook of the American Underground. We will continue now with our discussion of intelligence. The word intelligence, when used in a military sense, refers to those methods that can be used to gain useful information. We usually think of this as knowledge of the enemy, but it also includes information about the terrain, general population, available supplies, and all other facts that will help in planning future activities. Intelligence is roughly divided into three parts. A. Observation. During a hot war, this includes scouting and patrolling, observation of enemy troop movements, etc. On the Cold War front, this includes shadowing of enemy personnel, surveillance of enemy offices, tapping of telephones, interception of messages, and so forth. B. Research and analysis. Collecting and cataloging all possible useful information from general sources, newspapers, radio, trade magazines, etc., then matching up isolated scraps of information until an accurate picture is obtained of some situation that would not otherwise be known. C. Espionage. This includes the placing or recruiting of agents within the enemy personnel, where they can learn the enemy's plans firsthand, steal the enemy's documents or materials, influence or misdirect the enemy's plans or policies. Suppose you had a chance to see some important document for just a few minutes. How quickly could you scan it for its essential content? How well could you separate the important from the unimportant? Could you record this information in a written message that can be easily read and will not be misinterpreted? Imagine that you are the leader of a patrol sent forward to observe and track an enemy column prior to a possible ambush. From time to time, you will need to send back your observations in written form. Each member must develop the ability to put his thoughts on paper in such a way that they will be easily read and unmistakable. The first two projects are designed to give the new member an opportunity to test these skills while learning or reviewing basic elements of espionage activity. When these have been completed, more advanced material will be furnished to the member directly. Useful intelligence projects of increasing complexity and importance will be assigned to those wishing to specialize in this work. Security. It is obvious what a great advantage we can gain over our enemies by proper information about their plans and activities. It is equally true that much of this advantage will be lost unless we can keep our plans and activities secret from them. This is the basic purpose of all security, and it is divided into five basic parts. A. Protecting the identity of underground personnel and their families. B. Keeping secret the location, movements, and plans of guerrilla bands. C. Keeping secret the location of guerrilla headquarters, alternate hideouts, and supply depots. D. Protecting the identity of civilians or individual members of the enemy population that are friendly to underground forces. And E. Maintaining secrecy of communications. As we have already said, it is difficult to even guess what forms the coming conflict will take. Nevertheless, the strategy of all successful underground movements must satisfy these three basic principles. First is the principle of deliberate delay. During this stage, the underground gathers its forces, checks its security, prepares its intelligence, establishes its lines of communication, and waits for the enemy to become complacent and overconfident. Second is the principle of provocation. At the beginning of this stage, only a few real patriots are willing to take part in underground activity. The vast majority of the population is still wishfully thinking that they can get along with the opposing forces. They want only to be left alone and will not take action until they are personally threatened. During this stage, the underground conducts a series of actions which provoke the enemy forces into making harsh repressive measures on the general population. This turns the general population against the occupying forces and convinces them that the underground is really their only hope. Stage 3 may be called the principle of natural allies. When the government's action against the general population becomes sufficiently brutal, then large numbers of people will be willing to help or join the underground. Their reasons for doing so may be numerous, and their ideology may not always be the same as the basic underground movement. During this stage, minor differences between different underground groups must be minimized, and all of our natural allies must be rallied to the cause of freedom. The intelligence branch of the underground is well aware of the communist infiltration and control of the present United States government. It can rightly be said that we are now partially controlled by a foreign ideology. Thus, we are already engaged in phase one of this conflict. How long this will continue until open warfare breaks out is anyone's guess. Once again, the best prediction of our intelligence department is that stage two will last for several months, perhaps even years. This will be a time of assassination and counter-assassination, terror and counter-terror. During this phase, the average citizen may avoid direct conflict at the price of his dignity and individual freedom. Known patriots will be in extreme danger. For most people, membership in the underground will not materially increase their danger during this time. For many years, our enemies have carefully cataloged the name and address of every person who has ever written a patriotic letter to a newspaper. The membership lists of the more prominent conservative organizations have long been available to communist infiltrators in these organizations. Continued activity and membership in other conservative organizations by members of the underground is desirable in many cases, but those individuals should not identify themselves as such. For most of our own members, it will be best if you do not take part in the activities of these other organizations. Although many of you are already marked men, a certain degree of security can still be achieved by quietly dropping out of other right-wing activities and keeping your membership in the underground secret from all except your most trusted fellow members. There may come a time when the average American is still able to go about his business with little regimentation, but during which you, as a known or suspected patriot, may be sought out for arrest or assassination. Propaganda. Another essential function of the underground is to convincingly inform the general public of what they stand for, and thus gain the support of the general population. This must be done through propaganda, both written and spoken. Under conditions of enemy occupation, the spreading of anti-communist propaganda would obviously be very dangerous. Even now, there are certain phases of our propaganda effort that is best done by surreptitious means. Thus, observation, communication, and propaganda are three elementary duties of every underground member. At the present time, we are engaged in a propaganda war. Never before has propaganda been so important to the ultimate outcome of a major conflict. The ultimate object of any war is to force your desires upon the minds of your enemies. Our enemies are attempting to do this by the nonviolent means of psychological warfare. Later on in this training course, we will give heavy emphasis to the principles and actual use of propaganda warfare. Underground Training Program Phase 2, Intelligence. We are faced with a dangerous enemy who has repeatedly boasted of his plans to destroy our constitutional republic and to enslave our people. For more than 40 years, they have been infiltrating their agents into the most sensitive areas of labor, press, entertainment, education, law, communications, religion, industry, and government. The degree of their success is made obvious by our government's failure to oppose communism internationally and by our fellow citizens' lack of interest in their own preservation. We already know a considerable amount about this enemy, their origin, objectives, approximate strength, organizational structure, and general methods of operation. There are four areas where we especially need additional information. 1. Details of the techniques used in espionage, infiltration, and subversion by individual agents, including the methods by which they control their fellow travelers. 2. The equipment used for surveillance, communication, assassination, sabotage, etc. by individual enemy agents. 3. Working details of their short-range programs, either in operation or planned for the near future. 4. The actual identity of enemy agents, fellow travelers, and sympathizers, along with details regarding their work, place of residence, cover operation, means of transportation, travel pattern, personal appearance, mental characteristics, personal lives, business, and organizational activities. Our ultimate victory or defeat may depend on our ability to obtain enough of this vitally important information. There are literally thousands of sources from which bits of valuable information can be obtained. These range from such extremes as the daily newspapers to documents stolen from the enemy's guarded vaults. The methods of gathering intelligence are roughly divided into two groups. 1. Research and analysis, and 2. Espionage. Espionage includes all the illegal means of obtaining information, such as wiretapping, interception of mail, stealing of documents, secretly photographing records, infiltrating spies into enemy organizations, bribing or blackmailing individuals of the enemy apparatus. Research and analysis includes the careful and systematic search of all newspapers, magazines, trade journals, house organs, political pamphlets, books, public records, etc., to sift a few needles of valuable intelligence from several haystacks of general information. Professional intelligence organizations obtain about 95% of their information from research and analysis, and only about 5% from espionage. When espionage techniques are used, they prove most effective when a specific mission is carefully planned out in advance, which takes advantage of all possible background information that may be obtained by research methods. By changing names and places, we can use an actual case to illustrate the combined activities of research and espionage within an organization. The names, dates, and places of this example have been changed. February 1962. One of the members in Ohio noticed a small article in the newspaper to the effect that a man we will call Professor E.C. Smythe gave a talk on civil rights to a local businessman's club. This member typed out a 4x6-inch index card and mailed it along with many similar cards to national headquarters. The card is dated. In the upper left-hand corner, it reads Smythe, Edward C., followed by his home address, his phone number, occupation, Professor of Political Science, Bedrock College, Limestone, Ohio. Activities. Gave talk on racial equality to Cleveland Rotary Club. Source, February 11, 1962 issue of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, page 8. Without any special notice, this card went into a file cabinet with thousands of others. April 1962. One of the members in Ohio wrote, using a fictitious name, expressing interest in one of the left-wing peace organizations. Cards were sent in for each person whose name appeared as a sponsor on that organization's literature. Among these was a second card for Professor Smythe. August 1962. When one of the Communist Front organizations held a picnic rally near Columbus, Ohio, a team of members was there to record the automobile license numbers of all those attending. These were checked out by an associate member of the police force. Cards made out in the usual form were sent in. Among them was another card for Professor Smythe. On receipt of this third card, a yellow tag was placed in his file, and Professor Smythe was selected for special investigation. Additional information on his background was obtained from public records and from an innocent-appearing letter of inquiry to the college where he teaches. Still other details were obtained from the Retail Credit Bureau. A check of our own files located only one member in the town where Professor Smythe lives, and that member had not been recently active. A visit from our regional coordinator reactivated the interest of this member who, in turn, began a recruiting drive on the college campus where Professor Smythe teaches. This developed three new members, one of whom was a student in Professor Smythe's political science class. This student soon joined the local student peace union, which was also sponsored by Professor Smythe. These members kept a close watch on his activities. From this combined infiltration and surveillance, we have learned a great deal of personal information about Professor Smythe, his methods of operation, and his associates within the communist apparatus. Here we have seen a case where research and analysis led to a suspected agent, but he might easily have been a dupe or a misguided liberal. An espionage follow-up has not only confirmed this man's full loyalty to the international communist conspiracy, but has since resulted in an additional penetration of that apparatus by our own agents. Now let's go back and examine how these various techniques might be used to obtain additional information of the four basic types we need most. 1. Details of the techniques used in espionage, infiltration, subversion by individual agents, including methods by which they control their fellow travelers. An agent trainee may learn something of the general espionage methods used by communist agents who have defected from the party and have then written about their experiences. Beyond this, they are of very little value. The actual details of such techniques are uniformly neglected. More useful information can be obtained from the study of past court records in which evidence has been presented in espionage cases. Hints and clues may occasionally be picked up from continuous and careful study of the regular news media. Really basic information of this type, however, must be obtained by infiltration and espionage techniques. 2. The equipment used for surveillance, communication, assassination, sabotage, etc. by individual agents. hints about the type of hidden microphones, shortwave transmitters, miniature tape recorders, etc., used in surveillance and communication by espionage agents, sometimes are mentioned by chance in the regular press or news magazines in connection with reported spy cases. Technical details and construction plans occasionally are given in the electronics or popular science type magazines. Other information may be requested directly from the manufacturers of such equipment. The type of short-acting or long-acting poisons best suited for assassination under various conditions might be anticipated by a careful study of toxicology, from chemical abstracts and biological abstracts, from current magazines on pharmacology, as well as from such magazines as Scientific Monthly and Science Newsletter, all available from larger city libraries. Information on explosives is available from ordnance journals, literature from manufacturers, technical books, mining, drilling, and agricultural magazines, etc. Naturally, such special fields of interest are best pursued by some person who already has an aptitude in each particular line. This is one of the things that makes us feel that the American people are uniquely equipped to form a deadly, effective underground. Nowhere else in the world does any population have as many useful hobbies and avocations that could be adapted to underground warfare. Many byproducts of these hobbies can be used as sabotage instruments. Just one typical example, the dust from grinding wheels in metal shops should be saved to mix with grease for the bearings of enemy machinery. And we'll continue in just a moment.
There may be trouble ahead, but while there's moonlight and music and love and romance, let's face the music and dance. Before the fiddlers have played, before they ask us to pay the bill, and while we still have a chance, let's face the music and dance. Soon different tune, and then there may be teardrops to shed. So while there's moonlight and music and love and romance, let's face the music and
ladies and gentlemen, was a 1958 recording of the incomparable Miss Ella Fitzgerald. Do you know what it means to have to face the music? This is a term that is generally used when discussing being forced against your will to confront a situation or circumstance with which you really do not want to deal. We are in the position in America today where we are going to be forced to face economic crisis. There's just no getting around it. You must take steps to protect your assets. If you have no assets, you must take steps to ensure that you will be able to buy bread, milk, meat, pay for your transportation, your shelter, or perhaps even buy the life of a loved one with precious metals in a time when the American currency is without value and trade will be restricted to what you can do on the black market. Without precious metals, you will be trapped. We are going to have to face the music, and when we do, it's not going to be a romantic foxtrot.
If we ever need it, the Lord He follows all you need, amen. Follows all you need, amen. Oh, follows all you need, amen. If we ever need it, the Lord He follows all you need, amen. We need Him every day and every hour. The Lord He follows our journey, and now follows our journey, and now the Lord He is our journey, and now the Lord He follows our journey, and now we meet Him every day and every hour. The Lord before us, our journey, and now
Say to that is amen. We will now continue with underground training, phase 2 intelligence, and we are in the process of examining how the techniques of research and analysis and espionage might be used to obtain additional information of the 4 basic types we need most. And we are now ready to deal with type 3, working details of the enemy's immediate and future plans and activities. Advance information about peace marches and racial demonstrations can be had by subscribing to appropriate Communist Front publications. Details as to the size of the demonstration and degree of violence anticipated must be obtained by infiltrating such organizations. Communist plans for future propaganda campaigns, subversion, espionage, blackmail of government officials, etc., may be learned directly by infiltration or may be deduced from a close study of their past activities. Type 4. Identity and personal information about enemy agents. This requires the full scope of counter-espionage activity. Research and analysis of enemy publications, monitoring of communist sponsored meetings, surveillance of party offices, infiltration of enemy apparatus, recruitment of double agents, interception of enemy communication, etc., etc. Techniques of effective research. 1. Every researcher should be constantly on the alert for useful information in the general news media, radio, TV, magazines, etc. 2. Each researcher should have one field of interest to which he gives special attention. For example, one researcher might read every book available on escape and evasion, and all the stories or articles written on prison escapes, looking for ideas that might someday help our members escape from a concentration camp. Another researcher might specialize in electronic magazines, always searching for new information on radio communication, electronic surveillance, new types of burglar alarms, and so forth. Another researcher might continuously search the Communist Front publications for names of fellow travelers and announcements of future meetings, rallies, or similar activities for additional information that would tie suspected communists to known communist organizations, for friendships, business connections, and family relationships between known communists and unknown communists. Each city should have one researcher that carefully reads the daily papers to extract such information as names of speakers at left-wing meetings, names and addresses of both left- and right-wing letters to the editor, social functions attended by known communists, names of persons who might be potential recruits, news of coming peace marches and similar demonstrations, expressions of either pro- or anti-communist sentiments by local public officials, educators, businessmen, ministers, etc., evidence of communist-inspired violence, sabotage, or blackmail. There is an almost endless variety of areas that need to be covered. based on his or her own interests and abilities, each researcher should choose the specialty for which they are best qualified. Number 3. Be as specific as possible. Look for details. Include blueprints, drawings, or photographs of all technical equipment when possible. Don't expect your analyst to be a mind reader. Include all the facts. Continuously ask yourself the questions, would this information be of value to the national headquarters, to individual agents, to other members, to our technical specialists? 4. Avoid editorial opinions and general news items, as these are of little value and needlessly swamp our limited staff of analysts. 5. Do all the work locally that you possibly can. If the person is local, look them up in the telephone book or cross-index. Double-check to make sure the address is correct and that they still live there. Type cards if possible, otherwise print plainly. Include phone number and auto license number if possible. 6. Use standard 4x6-inch index cards for sending in information on individuals. Clip pages of magazines or photostat important articles. In outlining books, be sure important facts are fully covered. And 7. Always state the source of all information reported. Think like a footnote. Underground Training Program, Phase 3, Security. Security and intelligence are like the two sides of a coin. In a way, they are opposites, yet they are always connected to one another. The security forces of each side continuously try to protect the secrets which the intelligence forces of the other side are continuously attempting to discover. Students of military history can point out countless cases where major battles or entire wars have been lost by faulty security. Proper security measures are obviously of great importance to conventional military forces, but they are infinitely more important to unconventional forces, guerrilla operations, patriotic resistance movements, and espionage networks. Although a belligerent nation may suffer a great loss because of poor security, it's hard to imagine a situation where a nation's defenses could be completely overwhelmed by a single security leak. Not so with unconventional forces. An underground movement might be totally annihilated as the result of a single security leak. A guerrilla band might be trapped and completely wiped out because of a single clue that gave away their location to the enemy army. Unburied garbage can attract birds to the guerrilla campsite, and birds can attract enemy soldiers. A carelessly dropped cigarette butt on a jungle trail can give away the band's direction of travel. More than once, an entire network of espionage agents has been rounded up because of some seemingly unimportant piece of information casually passed from one friend to another in idle conversation. Very seldom will one conventional military force have overwhelming superiority over another conventional military force. Such is not the case in conflict between conventional military forces and underground resistance forces. Almost always, the conventional forces have to have necessary strength in men and equipment to easily round up and destroy the underground forces any time they can learn their identity and location. Thus, we see that underground forces have little or no defensive potential in the usual sense of the word. Their only defense is secrecy. Let us repeat this very essential fact. The only real defense of an underground movement is secrecy. This is even more true of individual espionage agents. Secrecy is your only defense. Good security begins with a clear understanding of the kind of information which the enemy intelligence will be trying to learn about you or your organization. A national government, a major military force, an underground army, an espionage agent, each will have different types of secrets which he must protect. Thus, each will place major emphasis on certain types of security measures. A national government must keep secret its diplomatic alliances, secret treaties, military plans, industrial potential, etc. Conventional military forces must keep secret their strength, tactics, immediate and long-range strategy, movements, weaponry, reserve potential, troop morale, and physical fitness. They must also keep secret the type and extent of information which their own intelligence staff has or has not learned about their enemy. An underground resistance movement must keep secret 1. Their plans and methods of operation. 2. Their capabilities for movement and transportation. 3. The location, strength, and organization of guerrilla forces. 4. The strength of arms, food, and other supplies. 5. Available reinforcements. 6. Any contacts they may have with other resistance groups or friendly military forces. 7. Identity of friendly supporters in the general population. 8. Location and identity of individual members of the resistance movement, as well as the location or identity of their family or close friends. 9. Location of hideouts, base camps, storage areas, supply depots, etc. 10. Codes, signals, passwords, and lines of communications. And 11. Most important of all, the underground movement must keep secret the extent and possible success of their own intelligence agents. By spreading rumors and false information, the underground may confuse enemy intelligence regarding the attitude of local inhabitants, current political and economic conditions, location and identity of underground leaders, health and sanitation conditions. Individual security is most important of all, the reason being that good organization of security begins with good personal security. A chain is no stronger than its weakest link. The individual member of an underground movement must, if he hopes to survive, do one of two things. A. If he is living under his own name, then he must keep his political beliefs to himself, and he must keep his underground activities and associations absolutely secret. B. If the members' underground associations are known, or strongly suspected, then his only alternative is to adopt a completely new identity, occupation, and environment. The individual espionage agent has these same two choices available to him, but the need for complete deception is even greater. There is no one more completely defenseless than the individual espionage agent once his security has been compromised. Personal security is a 24-hour-a-day job. To some people, individual security measures must come almost instinctively. Others may find such measures very hard to develop. Each individual's own habits and personality traits will have considerable effect on his attitude toward various precautions of personal security. And here we must stop for this evening, ladies and gentlemen. I encourage you to think about this information, unpleasant though it is, with the attitude that it could be reality. We must be informed. You must be intelligently trained and understand what we are up against. And don't neglect to tell your family each and every day that you are living to nourish and cherish them. You are pulsing the blood in their veins. Good night, and God bless you, and God save the Republic.